Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Whoa. Something's in here with us.
Yeah. Pretty convenient storm. This has Vendorian written all over it.
What? Vendor Prime's in the Beta Quadrant. There's no reason for Vendorians to be here.
That's what they want you to think. They're shapeshifters.
Trust me, Vendorians are setting us up.
I'm picking up a faint energy signal. It could be a way out.
What are you doing?
Checking the energy source?
That's exactly what the Vendorians want us to do.
There are no Vendorians, man. And just because they sound scary doesn't mean you should believe that stereotype.
Being controversial is what makes them so good at tricking their prey.
Fine. Wait here, then.
Yeah, right. That would play right into their tentacles.
Shall we go ahead and start the podcast?
Yep.
If you want.
Are you good, Dan?
Caves.
I'm okay.
Right. Jesse.
Are you guys okay?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
I was born ready.
All right. Well, we have then started the podcast.
I have Star Trek.
You're born something.
It's got Star Trek.
I got Star Trek.
It's got Star Trek.
No, I got.
We've got Star Trek?
We all have it.
It's without an, with no apostrophe, it's got Star Trek.
No. Please don't. that's
a dangerous path to go down.
We're confusing the audience.
That was the whole thing from the early days when somebody's like, actually, shouldn't it have no apostrophe? And it was like, no, it's not, it's a possessive. It has got Star Trek. The contraction is
maybe
it has got Star Trek.
Maybe they were thinking the contraction was it is got Star Trek, which wouldn't make sense, but that's all I can think that they might be thinking.
And that's silly.
Okay.
It has got Star Trek.
People shouldn't be so silly.
It's got Star Trek. Yeah. Welcome.
Poe Buddy's nerficked.
Welcome to It's Got Star Trek podcast. This is episode 211.
If you're listening, you're not silly.
Of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of news-em-ups this week. That's the new term you came. Was that last week you came up with that term, Dan? News-em-ups?
Yeah, news-em-ups.
Was that you? I was trying to remember.
Yeah. The whole thing is news-em-ups.
I remember it was great.
News-em-ups.
Yeah. Now I got it.
Every time you say it, and it seems like you're about to follow it,
but
with
then
something.
But then I get derailed.
Okay,
news 'em ups.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. I can work with that. Okay, yeah. You can do it.
I'm trying to help you.
No. Okay. Yeah. News 'em ups.
I'm the hype man.
Okay. News 'em ups. No. Now you're supposed to say yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
News 'em ups.
Yeah.
They're on the red. How's that?
They're on the rad?
Yeah, they're on the rad.
Okay. What does that mean?
That might need some workshopping.
Fair enough. It's important to take in criticism and construct it into something that will change the way I behave in the future so I don't piss off people or just make them bored or make them uncomfortable or something like that.
Alter your entire personality just for me, Dan.
Please. Yeah, well, I mean, that's why you're here is because I'm secretly trying to get you to fall in love with me. So.
Well, okay.
It's too late.
Provide some explanation to the audience here.
News 'em ups.
News 'em ups. No news 'em ups other than
they're on the rad.
Oh my God. Other than to note that this week we are joined in person by Tarek, our old friend Tarek, our old buddy Tarek. Who's been on the podcast before remotely, but he's in town. So we were able to snag him.
He's live in the studio.
And he's live in the studio with us. Welcome, Tarek.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good to be back.
We're excited to have you here. Tarek knows far more about Star Trek than most of the rest of us.
So he could probably replace me on the podcast.
This would be helpful. Not the replacing you on the podcast. Tarek's presence will be helpful to just raise up the general Star Trekiness of it all.
Last time, all the pressure on me for having.
Yes, exactly.
Remember everything.
Yes, you better get everything 100% correct, and you better identify any errors that we make and correct them, and you should be very clever and charming and creative when it comes to all the other fun facts about Star Trek that you can bring.
Just the right amount of moist.
Jesse, were you talking about getting? You're trying to find a replacement. Is that what you?
No,
just said?
I was just joking that he could. He could. You know, he's more qualified.
Chief O'Brien.
Chief O'Brien.
I was just goofing.
All right. Well, welcome, Tarek. We're excited to have you here.
I'm not trying to get out of it.
We're excited to be talking this week about Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 8, Caves.
I hate caves.
Was it like coming back from break? Is that what she did?
Yeah,
like,
that,
I hate caves, and then when she's coming, okay.
Yeah, they didn't. I actually used the crossfade clips to push them closer together. There was a bigger pause in between.
Did you use Audacity?
I used Audacity.
Oh, so you used crossfade clips in Audacity to do that?
Yeah,
that's pretty rad.
I know.
I'm into crossfading clips. I probably in Audacity specifically.
In that instance, I probably could have just deleted that portion because there was nothing there.
I probably.
But like, just in case I fucked it up, you know, crossfade clips will fix that for you.
It takes care of it all for you. It's great. Yeah. It's a great tool.
Yeah.
And we're not, neither of us are paid by Audacity. Audacity.inc. Inc.
Who would pay us if Audacity had someone, a payment method? Like just a bunch of people would just like,
a bunch of people.
Just send us a dollar.
It's like the WinRAR donation.
WinRAR.
If you have a good idea. Okay.
Poor WinRAR.
So we're discussing caves.
It's 7-zip all the way now.
We're about to get into caves.
Unspeakable evils in here?
It's probably like one of the shorter titles that we've had in a while, right? Most of them
stupid
have been
cave mission.
Pretty long. I know this because when I'm putting together the graphics for the show, for the It's Got Star Trek program, when I'm putting together the graphics, and I have to pick I have graphics templates to make my job easier. I have templates, and some of those templates have two rows for text. And some of them have one row. And it's been a while since I've used the one row. Let me tell you what.
They like the long titles.
I had to go all the way back to like that Voyager episode we did with the Civil War business. The Q. God, why am I not remembering? The Q and the Gray. That was one line. All on one line. Did not have to do two lines for that one.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's a little look behind the scenes.
What?
All right. What? No way.
But I thought right before we get into this discussion of caves, I thought we should orient ourselves and the audience to just caves in general.
What a cave is?
Not to what, I mean, they know what a cave is. I was going to suggest.
Soluble minerals?
We should state which our favorite cave is. Fictional? Or real, I don't know.
Like Luray Cavern.
Cavey.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be Luray Caverns.
Isn't this gross? Like, this is, I hate when they sniff on shows.
What about on podcasts? Because we do it a lot.
Well, no, because it's always,
That wasn't me.
Because whenever they do it in movies and shows, it's always like over exaggerated. This one wasn't as exaggerated, but it's still gross.
Cavey.
Yeah, but sometimes they always do it like their nose is stuffed up with some kind of flour or something, and it's really awful.
I like the Mines of Moria.
Yeah, the Mines of Moria are pretty good.
That's my favorite cave.
Now, there's a debate about the, you know, cave versus mine. I think it counts because when
they
you go
call
to,
it a mine.
When you go to the thesaurus, it does include mine as a synonym for cave. I looked it up.
There's that cave in Empire Strikes Back. That's pretty sweet.
Relevant synonyms for caves. You have grotto, and of course this all takes place on Grotinus. Yes. Grotinus is the planet.
I didn't catch that.
And Grotinus, the implication of Grotinus is that it's a planet riddled with grottos. It's Grotinus.
Okay.
You know, it's like glutinous, but Grotinus. Right.
They were also on Glish.
I couldn't find anything about a clever joke.
It sounded cool.
Glish. There are some clever jokes. The Chiron 4 is a funny joke because it's the planet Chiron 4, and you use a Chiron to show that its name is Chiron 4.
Oh, snap.
But I didn't get a joke for Glish, and I didn't get a joke for Balkus 9. I don't know. I'm guessing there's jokes in there that have just flown past me.
Maybe.
But when it comes to caves, other synonyms include cavern, den.
Whoa!
Hollow, although I don't know.
Oh, no, that's not a cave.
Chasm.
No, chasm's not a cave.
Abyss. That makes me think of water, though.
Generally.
Maybe that's just the movie, The Abyss.
Abyss is just a big, you know, chasm.
A burrow.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Okay. A mine, which, you know, it's like, all right.
They call it a
mine. It's like a man-made cave, a human-made cave. A gallery, which I think I saw that and I was like, wait, what? But then I realized I think in caving terms, a gallery is like a term for a certain type of open area in a cave.
I think that sounds right.
And then tunnel was another.
Tunnel is a cave.
It's a form of cave, although you kind of think of cave. It's like it depends how long the tunnel is, I suppose.
If a mine is a cave, a tunnel is a cave.
I agree. I think that's a fair point.
Wait, but doesn't a cave have to have an ending? Isn't that what makes it a cave? You can go in, but you can't go. You can go out the same place, you can have a network
of caves that do lead out to other cave entrances. Right.
That seems misleading.
I know. I was thinking the same way you were, Dan. But yeah. I thought long and hard about it. I prayed on it. And then I was like, holy crap.
He didn't pray on it.
I was like, you know, what about the mother holes that you can crawl out of?
What about them mother holes?
I think the Mines of Moria is a good one. I was kind of like split between like the Bat Cave, which I think would be kind of awesome.
Oh, I forgot about
that. And I was trying to think of like which specific Bat Cave, but I would want my own kind of Bat Cave. Like it wouldn't be like exactly like any of the movies, but the concept of a Bat Cave where you got a bunch of computers and shit in a car. And some like spaceships and shit, like in a cave.
Computers in a cave
with a bunch of bats. It's pretty cool. I like that. I like that idea.
No, I need the 1960s Batman.
Yes, Batcave. That would be kind of
with all the helpfully labeled items.
Yes,
that's perfect.
And the very clean buttons, like super one clean, button to operate things,
velvety things.
Yes. Doesn't Superman have a cave of diamonds or a cave of something?
It's in the ice. It's like an ice cave.
Cave of solace. I was gonna say like desolation, but no, it's solace.
But it's not a cave of solace. It's something else. It's like the
Fortress of Solitude.
Shit, does a fortress count as a cave?
No.
Not
unless it's like
if it's
Helm's
carved
Deep.
Into a the rock.
Yeah, sure. If it's like carved in the rock.
Yeah, like Helm's Deep, yeah, but not the Fortress of Solitude. No. That was just some ice business.
What about in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade when they went to find the Holy Grail?
Or what about Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark when they were in that Peruvian temple?
Okay, I'm wondering first, though, because I asked first, what about
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom?
Where
they were
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Guy.
No, in Indiana Kalima. Jones. No, that's a temple. But Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
It's a temple in a cave. I agree.
No, but
I
you didn't answer my first question. Is what about Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade when they go into a thing carved into a wall? That's the temple where holds the Holy Grail.
Well, that's in Petra. Except in real Petra, it doesn't actually go that far.
But my question is, I'm asking if that's a cave. Is that a cave?
Borderline.
Yes.
Yeah. It feels cavey to me.
Yeah.
I think it feels cavey.
So wait. So that's okay. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. That's some kind of temple.
Yeah.
But you're calling it a cave because it's in the rock.
It's because it appears to have been a mine or something that they've scooped bits and pieces out to make it into a temple.
Okay, well, what about this?
But it looks very craggy and stalagmite-y and stalactite.
What about the movie From Dusk Till Dawn, which I'm about to give a spoiler. From Dusk Till Dawn. That was located in a temple as well, except the temple was a bar at the top, and then it went down into a temple. So is that a cave?
I don't remember enough.
So you're saying that a temple can be a cave?
Could be a cave.
You're saying that a temple can be
a cave? It may have been a natural cave that they turned into a shady den of vampirism.
Like the bat cave is that.
So you're saying a temple can be a cave, but it's not necessarily a cave. A temple can be both a cave and not a cave.
You could use a cave for a temple.
I think
that's a common use.
Quite probably the majority of architectural objects one would call a temple, the majority are probably not in the cave style.
That's why I question if they really count as caves.
But they can be.
I think it
can be.
Because I think you can.
It's an ancient
thing. I think if you delve into rocks, if you delve into the granite sinews of a mountain, that's you're making a cave, right? It's maybe not as cool as a natural cave. I mean, temperature wise, it probably
would. I feel terrible. I am dying.
Well, Dan, I hope this all has not been an excuse for you not to suggest which cave you might go for.
Mine's the Fortress of Solitude.
Even though that was the one
that probably wasn't the cave.
We were saying that to be difficult.
it's like an ice temple.
No, the answer, of course, is a turbo lift. That is the ultimate cave.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
The ultimate cave. All right, so there you go.
Audience. Like that time when we all got trapped in that turbo lift?
Yeah, okay, all right. Episode, actual Star Trek. Actual Star Trek episode.
So we want to talk about Star Trek first and foremost.
Okay. Are you about to click a button or are you just...
No, I was just looking for things. It was a story. It was one of those three short story episodes.
They've had this format in in this show.
Have they done that?
A few, maybe.
Have they done the flashbacks, though? I don't
remember. Well, not flashbacks, but there have been stories. Like, there was the one where they were, like, being interrogated.
Ah, yes. Yeah. For the,
And so
the trial.
It was like a story within story format.
But this one was almost more of, like, a animated clip bottle show, which I did not know was possible, which I thought was amazing, though.
Yeah, it was a bottle show, it was a clip show, but with new info.
Yeah,
Bottle as cave.
Yes. Did you see a bottle ass cave?
Bottle as cave. You know,
it's like, man, this
bottle,
is a bottle as cave. Let me tell you what.
It was bodily.
So, yeah, so it was a combination between bodily the cave. Short story episodes, like Bob's Burgers does that, Simpsons does that, you know, and so it's a combination between that and a clip show, but that's...
Rick and Morty has done a similar thing with the memory thing.
Lots of modern cartoons.
It's a clip show, but not actually a clip show because it's like coming up with new stories.
It's no Shades of Grey.
No.
If you know what I'm saying.
Speaking of Rick and Morty, the conspiracist...
Nobody was speaking.
Conspiracist engineer... Yeah, he just mentioned Rick and Morty.
Yes, I did.
The conspiracist engineer, Steve Levy was his name, and that's a producer for Rick and Morty.
Really?
I'm wondering if it's the same... It's got to be the same guy, right? Because didn't Mike McMahon... Wasn't he part of it?
Mike McMahon was on Rick and Morty as well. Yeah. In fact, Steve Levy, he might be the one who... Did he pass away? There was one... I wish I could remember.
From Rick and Morty?
Rick and Morty.
No, that was... No, there was another... No, I don't think the other person was a... I don't know what their position was, but it wasn't Steve Levy.
I know it was a high-up producer guy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I apologize for not getting those names correct. But yes, I also like that we learned that the reason why Steve Levy... is he an ensign?
He was also the producer for...
He was a lieutenant.
He was
a lieutenant. A full lieutenant.
Steve Levy was also the producer for...
Oh, that's right.
For Harmontown, wasn't he?
He may have been.
That was like the same guy, yeah.
But...
podcast with Dan Harmon.
There's been one of those lingering questions of why do they keep him in Starfleet if he's this crazy conspiracy guy? And it's great with this throwaway little line from Boimler saying, like, I know you're some sort of out of the box math genius, but you're still obnoxious. So
you're insufferable.
Now we know the deal as to like what he's bringing to the party.
I just want to help.
it's a great thing the Lower Decks does with just a simple throwaway line.
Yes.
Explains so much.
That's so much information.
That's what happened last week when they talked about when they were like, oh, this isn't these people aren't getting killed from like that ship monster, whatever that was.
Yes, the ship monster.
That was looking like it was killing people, but they were like, Boimler was just like, oh, it turns out they weren't killing them all along. And that was like a throwaway like move to the next
it didn't play into the plot where they were then. It was just like, okay, I'm gonna say that and move on.
Right, exactly.
That would play right into their tentacles.
all right, so there's a tremendous amount to talk about in this episode. Overall, I mean, firstly, it was fun to have a nice sort of straight-up feel-good episode. Mm-hmm. There isn't the monster scary ship, right, that Dan just referred to.
No monster scary ship.
The storyline was like very straightforward but engaging, fun, very structured story, right? So like once you've seen the first 10 minutes of the show, you kind of know exactly what the show is doing. Mm-hmm. You can predict some of the moves, but not in a bad way, not in a like, oh, I'm bored. You're kind of almost anticipating.
An exciting format that we've seen. Like The Simpsons does it a bunch, and
but this
other
is even,
animated shows do it.
I think even a little bit more refined, and they have that Tendy aspect where you're just like the aliens, you're like, I want to know what the Tendy story is.
And it was actually good that Mariner kept pushing it off, because that meant she could do it at the end, which was basically reminding everybody, everyone got all their hate out, and then it was her story that brought them together at the end, so it worked out that hers was
But it's funny, it's sort of funny the whole time, because you know that's it's still, like, a cave story is the same as, being stuck in a cave is the same as being stuck in a turbo lift, and, you know, it's like, no, that's different.
Yeah, I know, right?
We're talking about caves, we're in a cave.
That is not a cave story!
It's not a cave story.
A couple things that I thought were interesting about this episode. You know, we talked last week. We knew the title, right? We knew the title of the episode.
I didn't know this.
We guessed. I guessed anyway. I was like, you know.
I guess.
I say all manner of genius things. This, I don't believe, was one of them. I think this was very easy to guess that a Star Trek episode titled Caves was going to play on the fact that Star Trek, particularly TOS through Voyager, was famous.
Lots of caves.
For the specific vibe of the TV set foam rock cave, right? And I was like, okay, I'm figuring they're going to play with that somehow. But I couldn't predict exactly how it turned out. But that is what they did here.
There's more like cave analogs in the new Star Trek.
But the thing
it's
with
not,
the new...
It's not literal, Cave.
And the new Star Trek, right? So, like, first of all, Enterprise had Star Trek-style caves, but it was HD.
Yeah.
So they had to, like, upgrade them a little, but they still kind of had the vibe. They just didn't do a lot of cave stuff on Enterprise. Right?
No, they
went to a few caves.
It's more open.
There was like some Vulcan caves. There was some cave where everyone like went all loopy. Classic Star Trek. Everyone starts acting all weird. Episode
because that was the T'Pol one where she.
Yeah, I think so. They're like cave
convinced
moss or
she's
something.
A spy or something. She's
yeah,
talking
yeah,
to
yeah.
The monsters.
It was like they're all getting paranoid, and it's basically they were in like a mushroom tripping cave. But they didn't call it that. But the point is that they didn't do a lot of cave stuff, and what they did do, it still had the Star Trek cave vibe a little bit, but it was starting to look a little different. By the time you get to start to Discovery and Strange New Worlds, Picard, etc., their production values sort of like don't allow for it. Like they've got too much, like they can't do the Star Trek style cave. Now it's okay because they're doing these awesome production value. You get to see these alien worlds in a much more interesting fashion. But this was highlighted to me in this episode where I was like, oh man, I do kind of miss the clearly styrofoam rock that's been painted like purple and green.
That pleases me.
Exactly.
We learned a few things on this episode.
How many things?
How many?
A few, usually.
What did
like
you learn?
Three.
Is this an official list?
This is just, I'm just going to name some things we learned. We learned that Steve Levy isn't so bad.
Yeah.
And that Vendorian conspiracies are correct. We learned that. So, you know, Steve Levy, he's all right. We learned that the Graflax monster is just a cool dude protecting its child, right? Which kind of bummed me out a little bit. There was an episode of Mandalorian where they were trying to get this egg from this monster.
Oh, that's a horrible episode.
Yeah, I know. I remember that episode. And that was like the exact opposite. I was like, oh, man, that kind of bummed me out.
That's one of the differences between Star Trek and Star Wars.
We learned that Delta Shift is ultimately misunderstood and that they have a right to be bitter because nobody knows who they are. They're not just a bunch of sneaks.
Everybody's sleeping.
Yeah. We learned that the Moss like their stories, which isn't something we really learned, but I think it's worth following up with saying the Lower Deckers suddenly seem to be cool with the Moss that tried to fuck them up, but like now that it wants to hear their stories, they're all cool with the Moss. How did they get cool with the Moss all of a sudden?
Because it stopped trying to kill them.
Yeah,
but it just
Vendorian.
But it just wanted their stories, and you know, so it's kind of like you have something to offer me, therefore now I'm not going to kill you, and they're like, oh, you're our best friend now, so.
Well, first of all, I mean, it's very Star Trek.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with you in terms of like in a real world situation. Yeah, maybe emotions wouldn't permit that, but Star Trek is usually supposed to be about a more elevated type of person. But it's also, if you look at the theme, every one of the stories that happened in this episode, pretty much all of them were about miscommunication.
Yeah.
Of, like misunderstanding. Misunderstandings resolved, people can get along.
And people sort of jealousy over hanging out with other people. And they pointed out at the beginning of the episode that they hadn't been around each other for a while, which is actually
their new jobs, responsibilities have been getting in the way.
And that wasn't just made up. Like that's actually been happening over the season. We haven't seen them paired up together. So
yeah, not all four of them.
And so inevitably they hang
quatted
out.
Up.
They hang out with other people and that makes them jealous. And so and then Tendi's story makes them remember they're all best buds.
Funny they're doing so many away missions though. That's a lot of missions.
Well, they're lieutenant junior grades now.
Yeah, I guess
lieutenant's junior grade.
Right.
Jesse, you were right about the Vendorians, the Moss that liked their stories. Now, the Moss apparently had free will and liked their stories, but somehow it was also a test by the Vendorians. It was a morality test, which is really presumptuous and invasive, like giving someone a morality test. Just like it's presumptuous and invasive to make somebody pregnant through skin touching.
They're elitist
aliens. That's pretty fucked up. But yeah, so how did this work, though, with the Moss was like, I'm gonna fuck your shit up, right? And then the Vendorians were like, this was a morality test. Does that mean that the Vendorians told control the Moss to make like do bad Moss things to the Lower Deckers,
or did bad Moss things,
or did the Vendorians did the
it's a horrifying imagery,
did the Vendorians bring the Lower Deckers down to that cave because they knew the Moss people would be there?
So you're suggesting that in the latter example, it would be as if you threw somebody into like the zoo enclosure with polar bears or something to see if they could work together.
Yeah.
Because you just know the polar bear is going to be a problem versus having some communication or something.
Or some kind
or
of
control over
their.
My guess is it was probably the latter. And or it doesn't quite square.
Oh, this moss is doing something that moss shouldn't do.
somewhere in there is Boimler saying Moss is doing something.
I did not notice
doing,
that.
It's doing something that Moss shouldn't do. Wait a sec.
This
Moss is doing something that Moss shouldn't do.
I'm delighted by that. One of the many the many advantages to having these sound clips that are so lovingly and artisanally selected and snipped out by our very own Dan.
Aww. Yeah.
Woo!
Whoa!
Oh! The other option is that they just take advantage of situations happening. The Vendorians.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we'll just pop in and say this was a morality.
Yeah, right. They just, oh, yeah. We meant it all along. We were like more superior to you and stuff. But really, they're just like kind of fucking scavengers that scavenge around and suck off people.
Well, so here's the thing. It's kind of the
Because they're scavenging. It's like they didn't set this up. They're just coming in and saying they set it up.
Scavenging and so they're morality tests?
Yeah, basically.
Sort of.
They're looking for a situation that already occurs and they're feeding off of it somehow.
It's that coworker that just shows up and takes credit for the project. They did nothing.
And they are shapeshifters.
Yeah.
It's like, we've been here the whole time.
The Vendorians are a good character.
That coworker is a shapeshifter too, like a mental shapeshifter.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Co-workers.
Vendorians for Lower Decks, very good choice. There's, you know, Lower Decks, of course, touches all manner of aspects of the whole Star Trek world.
That's a classic Vendorian morality test.
But I really like it when they reach into the vault, as it were, because Vendorians were first seen in Star Trek, the animated series, the episode The Survivor, which we discussed in episode 72 of It's Got Star Trek, along with the Infinite Vulcan.
that was the one where Spock got big?
Why is he so big?
Isn't that the Infinite Vulcan?
It might be, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
It is. So we saw them there, and then we didn't see any Vendorian on screen anyway. I'm sure they appear in the books, etc. But on screen, we didn't see a Vendorian until Lower Decks Season 1, Episode 2, Envoys, where there was a Vendorian who was disguised as an Andorian.
Right.
Wait a minute.
And if you recall, it was an example of where Boimler, his book smarts were not good enough to deal with the real world, and he was trying to protect an Andorian who he thought was being abused by the other patrons at the bar. And it turned out that the patrons at the bar knew that the Andorian, or suspected that he was a Vendorian. Turned out he was, and he escaped. He transformed back into a Vendorian and scuttled out.
What?
So we know very little about the Vendorians.
No way.
So having them play a major role in this episode was another fun example of Lower Decks not only utilizing a previous alien or culture or whatever, but actually expanding on the lore of that particular culture. Cause we learn more about like this whole like morality stuff and everything. Like, I guess they have this weird hang up. I guess they like eating slurpy ants. Like they like slurping the insides out of some sort of big giant ant things. Do you have a sound effect for that, Dan?
No, I don't. I also don't have the sound effect where the dude is breaking his leg. I was like, I almost took a sound, like recording of that, but then I was like, I don't want to hear that back. But so there's a couple of them I chose against using because they're gross.
I thought you were just a paranoid anxiety made up by people who need an imagined enemy to simulate order on unrelated disasters so life doesn't feel so random and chaotic.
What did you to think?
No!
That response is great because that's like exactly how the conspiracy is. Like, that's exactly what they want you to say. Like, that's what we want you to think.
It was good.
Yeah.
Although I understood it was for the joke, being somebody who gets aggravated
being controversial is what makes them good at tricking their prey. That's something Steve Levy said, which is funny because they trick us because like nobody wants to believe that they're real.
So like, I get aggravated by people who are into like the absurd conspiracy theories. I understand it. I understand the appeal. The reason I get aggravated is because there's lots of actual problems that could use your brain power. Like there's actual conspiracies of badness going on that would be great if you used your power and energy to get at. So I do get aggravated sometimes when people distract themselves. Mm-hmm. I think at the behest of the actual conspiracies.
Right. And not only could they be using their mind on something more important, they could stop damaging the things that are actually real. Like,
yes.
We'll 359.
Yes, which is offensive.
Yeah. It's offensive. Saying to Wolf 359 is a lie. Yeah. Fucked up. Now, the one that says Q doesn't exist, that's kind of dangerous. They said Picard is a hologram. He's like a golem, right?
It's well, not, close. A, not here. Not at this
not
point.
Not yet.
Oh, you're
that's,
right.
That's not until like 20 years later.
Okay. Yeah. And then I like that. It's awesome. Picard is a hologram, but the Voyager's EMS is.
right. The EMH is not.
The EMH is not.
I did like that. But what I'm getting at is, it's mildly aggravating that Levy turns out to be right on this one particular one, but I get it. It's a funny joke. It's a funny joke to have him turn out to be correct. And they did temper it a little bit by having the Vendorians at dinner saying, being all like, ha ha ha, your knowledge is interspersed with a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, you know, right. Basically.
We definitely didn't, as you say, do the Klingon Civil War.
Yeah, that's great. Do the Klingon War.
So he was talking about being active on subspace forums. So they're making subspace out to be like the internet.
Yeah, and it's like FidoNet.
Yeah, and yeah,
it's
is
like
that,
Usenet.
FidoNet, is that the one where they sent the messages at
batches
the end?
At the end.
Yeah. Benches at the end. That's what they did in like Enterprise or something. Yes. I think it was Hoshi.
Hoshi had to send it in batches. Yeah. So to the audience, both Dan and I ran bulletin board systems back in the early 1990s.
Oh, no.
And the way the messages worked to get to the outside world, this was pre-web. The computer basically batched up all the messages, dialed into a server, and then it would start distributing it around the world, and then would also download all the messages. It was good times.
You did?
Yes, we did. We got old. That's what we did.
Definitely.
I'm sorry. You're what?
Old.
We are very old.
So now remember last week, Badgie was able to travel through subspace. He was able to get into subspace, and that was on his path to becoming a god, right? Got into subspace. And I was like wondering, how did Badgie like traveling over subspace? And it's just because it's the internet. They've already done stuff like that with like Lawnmower Man and stuff like that.
Yeah. But it's not the real internet because Star Trek doesn't have
that's
the real
what I'm
internet.
Saying. That's why I didn't get it before.
2024, that's, you had to have a channel. Like a data channel.
That's why I wasn't fully understanding it last week, because the reason Badgie's able, I was like, subspace, that's just for messages. But if you treat it like it's the internet, when it's not the internet, it makes more sense that Badgie could travel, do that shit. And subspace forums are like, internet. It's all FidoNet.
Do you know what else makes sense?
FidoNet.
No. Taking a break.
Taking a break.
Taking a break.
FidoNet.
Taking a break.
FidoNet.
All right. We're going to take a break and we will be right
FidoNet.
Back.
FidoNet.
Right. Fido back.
Okay, we're back.
Shut the fuck up.
Yes. I don't know if this counts as news 'em ups, but I briefly wanted to. I had a question. This was about Mike McMahon's giving that speech about like he doesn't know what's going on with all the Star Trek series and stuff. Mm-hmm. And one of his quotes was, "I would love to finish Lower Decks with the plan that I have for it." And then he says, "I would say take Prodigy looking for a new network and take a look at Picard being wrapped at season 3." And so then the next outside of his quote, this is by the author of the article, says McMahon is clearly pointing out that Paramount Plus seems done with the current state of Star Trek, that those shows, including Picard, didn't have enough eyes on it early. I thought Picard was always planned for three seasons.
It was, and that author is it's a clickbait article.
Yeah.
And McMahon was aggravated by it and went out to try to expand his views afterwards,
right,
where he didn't come right out and say that the words were twisted, although you certainly got the impression that that was the implication he gave. Mm-hmm. But he stressed, he was like, look, in this environment with streaming the way it is, and again, reading between the lines, Paramount Plus kind of sucks. All right, Paramount Plus, if you want to give us a bunch of money, we will reverse that opinion. But now,
it's a very easy way to change our minds.
Because we're giving you money, it's like, it's great. I'm enjoying watching Frasier, and I like watching all the Star Trek, but I don't like watching commercials for shit before, on my commercial-free tier, before the show starts. I don't like starting the show and having the first 10 or 20 seconds be 320 by 200 resolution gobbledygook
and
nonsense.
And like, Amazon Prime does it, but they let you skip it. I mean, like, Amazon... Yeah. Like it's,
you can skip. Yeah.
You can skip it on Amazon Prime, and like, so I'm saying the ones that do have commercials, you can at least skip it. Yeah, so why can't we at least have a skip button?
So but my main point is, I think that what Mike McMahon was getting at was, he was like, look, watch the show, watch it on Paramount Plus, watch the show, give it eyeballs, because that helps us. Help us now, don't help us when the show gets canceled. But I agree. Yeah, that article was a total, not the actual writer was, it was a bunch of nonsense. Mm-hmm. But what is not a bunch of nonsense, I thought, before we get back to our discussion, you know, we're talking about caves.
Our discussion?
The episode is called Caves, but we're also talking about caves more generally.
I hate caves!
She claims to hate caves, maybe not by the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. I quite like caves. Now, I'm not a spelunker. I'm not looking to squeeze my body through some horrifying nonsense and get trapped in a hole where I just get like nibbled on by some sort of creatures.
Caves
where they have lights and stuff.
In principle, caves are kind of cool. So I thought, why don't we provide ourselves and our listeners with some cool facts about caves?
Oh, yeah. I had a cave baby with Dr. T.
So I found a document entitled...
You gave birth to a clone baby.
Notice that Tana called it a clone baby, but then Rutherford called it a cave baby.
Yeah. You gave birth to a clone baby.
Oh, yeah. I had a cave baby with Dr. T.
Yeah, language
Which
is
a clone or a cave? Both. Is it a temple or a cave?
It can be both.
So in this case, we're asking, is it a temple or a cave? In the other case, is it a clone or a cave?
Well, again, some clones are cave babies. Okay. Not all clones are caves.
Yes, okay. Exactly. It's like the square rectangle business.
Yeah. You got me there.
All right. So this document is called 10 Cool Facts About Caves by Kate Collins.
By Cave Collins?
By Kate Cavies.
Kate Collins, it was published on July 3rd, 2019 for Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park.
Oh. Where is that?
Well, you'll find out.
No.
But I'll just tell you, it's in Colorado. Colorado. But I'll let you know some more details about this because I really appreciated this list. So we'll give him a plug here, the Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park.
Okay.
So cool fact about caves. Number one, while most caves are formed by the action of acidic water on karst, a landscape of limestone, dolomite, and gypsum, some are formed by lava tubes from volcanoes or from meltwater in glaciers.
You see, that I didn't know.
I don't know entirely what a karst is, but I guess,
I was familiar with karst.
I guess from context
clues. Limestone business.
Did you just find this article now, or have you had this burning for a while?
No, this is in my note. I've copied the facts from the website.
Okay,
into my
notes. This is a follow-up to what, like, your favorite cave, and you were going over the different names for caves. Is this like a follow-up to that? Now you're talking more about what defines a cave?
Well, I mean, there's some relation because they both are focused on the topic of caves. But this is an article written by Kate Collins.
Cave Collins.
Published on July 3rd of 2019.
Cave Collins.
And it's the 10 cool facts about caves. Now, I'll note, Miss Collins does not say top 10 facts about caves. Okay. These are merely 10 cool facts.
In whatever order.
Now, number two, in most caves, the dissolving of the karst takes more than 100,000 years
Holy shit.
To make enough space for one person.
That's interesting.
Cool cave fact.
Boy, there's only eight more.
Ancient people were painting patterns and figures on cave walls
painting patterns.
More than 40,000 years ago. Scientists believe that Neanderthals might have painted on caves in the Iberian Peninsula up to 64,000 years ago. And a figure of an animal on Borneo. More than 40,000 years ago. Cool cave fact number four.
Borneo.
Oh my God, we're doing this.
Mayans built temples over caves or built them to look like caves because they believed that caves were the entrance to the underworld. Other ancient people also considered caves to be sacred spaces. Yeah. Boom! Temples! See, this is helping you out. These cool facts.
So temples can be caves.
Temples can be caves. They can clarify these things for you.
I think it was, usually the entrance to the underworld thing was pretty common, I think.
Number five, arthropods, fish, amphibians, and insects that have evolved to live in caves.
They all live in caves.
Are called troglobites.
Troglodytes?
No, troglobites. The first troglobite identified in the 1700s was the eyeless white amphibian called the Olm. Some, such as the blind wolf spider of Hawaii, the devil's hole pupfish of Death Valley, and the Texas blind salamander, are found only in one location. Troglobites. Cool K-Fag number six.
We're actually doing this.
There's 10 of them.
Is this a new segment that we're going to have to endure every week?
No, this is a cave. We're talking about caves.
Okay. This is a cave episode.
No, this is very interesting.
Number
caves
six.
Part two comes out, you'll get more of it.
Yes.
Oh, man.
So, I don't know if Kate Collins wrote a sequel
cave
to this list.
Collins.
I don't know. Number six, sulfur is the basis of nearly all life forms. In the Cuevo de Villa Luz in Mexico, single-celled organisms called snotties oxidize the sulfur from underground springs. Sulfur is the basis of nearly all this.
Yeah, man.
This is a weird sentence. Sulfur is the basis of nearly all life forms in the Cuevo de Villa Luz in Mexico. Single-celled organisms called snotties oxidize sulfur from underground springs. Okay, I apologize for that. It was an awkward sentence to read, and I read it awkwardly.
It's okay.
Fact number seven. Humans have used caves for shelter, food storage, mushroom farming, hideouts from the law, and many other activities.
Oh, yeah.
The Reed Flute Cave in China was an air raid shelter during World War II.
Shut the f*** up.
That's a new favorite.
Dan's had enough of World War II.
Hey, we're almost there.
Everyone keeps talking about World War II. Dan says, fuck you.
cave fact number eight. The caves in Paradise Glacier on Mount Rainier in Washington were world famous for most of the 20th
until they melted.
It just stops. Most of the 20th. The caves have disappeared as the glacier melted. Okay, so for most of the 20th century, I guess. All right. Come on, King
Collins.
Yeah,
right.
You're not copy editing this business? I mean, I guess I should have read this more closely.
Yeah.
Number nine, some of the largest natural crystals ever found were formed in the Cuevo de los Cristales, or the Cave of Crystals, 1,000 feet under Nikea Mountain in Mexico.
I am dying.
Translucent gypsum beams are up to 26 feet long and weigh up to 55 tons.
Whoa.
Temperatures in the cave reach 138 degrees Fahrenheit.
Really?
It has been reflooded since exploration. Just FYI. I guess it was deflooded.
Evidence!
That's a hot cave.
And then they reflooded it. Hot caves. All right.
Caves is usually
and it comes
cold.
Down to the bottom. I don't know if you have, do you have a drum roll sound effect, Dan? Dan, do you need a sweater? You sound cold. Number 10.
You're funny.
Number 10. 3 million wrinkle-lipped free-tailed bats live in Deer Cave in Mulu National Park on the island of Borneo, one of the world's largest known cave passages. Wrinkle-lipped free-tailed bats.
Ah, yes.
I wonder why they call it Deer Cave if they've got 3 million wrinkle-lipped bats in there.
Bat Cave was already taken.
Ah, good point, Tarek. Excellent. All right, so thank you very much, Kate Collins.
Cave Collins.
And to learn more about caves, we suggest, you know, learn if you're in the area, you should check out the Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park, which is just off I-70 in Glenwood.
What is this? Is this an advert? Is this a read now you're doing?
It's just off of I-70 in Glenwood.
I don't know what's going on. Is this a bit?
This is the first official commercial.
It's just off of I-70 in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. It's midway between, quote, it's midway between Aspen and Vail.
Terrible.
Approximately 160 miles west of Denver, 90 miles east of Grand Junction.
So what if you get on here? If you get on 70, like in Maryland, well, can you just ride it out to Colorado?
Possibly, yeah, because the highways go horizontal. Like if it's an even, in the United States, if it's an even number interstate, it's going east to west. And if it's an odd number, it goes north to south.
Totally. Yes!
And lower in south, higher numbers in
precisely,
north.
Precisely,
yes. And then lower west.
Lower in the west.
That's how it works with the Arlington addresses, is the higher addresses are higher north than the lower addresses. I know that because I used to deliver pizza for Papa John's, and this was before.
It also applies to the housing values.
I was
North Arlington.
Yeah, that is true. I didn't. This was before
the wasteland of South Arlington. It's like those people live in $700,000
houses.
This
was before cell phones and GPS and all that stuff. So we had to look at this map and you had to guess where Second Street was based upon the address. And keep in mind, Second Street was broken up into about 10 or 15 different pieces.
Right, yeah.
So it was all just like, I think the higher address is that one.
Seems
fucking impossible.
But yeah, so to reach the park at Glenwood Springs, take exit 116 off of the I-70 and turn north towards the stoplight.
Is this a relative that's trying to get people over to the...
I think it's Big Cave.
It's Big Cave.
Move into the left turn lane. Turn left at the stoplight, travel a short distance along the hotels, watching for the overhead gondola, and watching on the left-hand side of the road for our sign for Glenwood Springs Adventure Park. Turn left on Devereaux, and then take the next right to our parking area access road. The ticket office for the park is at the gondola base. Now, what's important for people to know
I still don't know what's happening. This has been going on for like 15 minutes.
If you haven't visited the Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park, there is a gondola involved. You know, like one of those... you know,
how the is thing the gun? Does it take you into the cave?
I don't know. I just saw a picture on the website. The website has like pretty mountains and that's a gondola. Intense, it's yeah. got a picture of a gondola.
Gondola means you go up a mountain.
Taking the mission with my own two eyes.
Anyway, you know, not to derail us too much, we can get back to the discussion now, but I just thought, you know, learn a few cave facts along the way, as well as how to get to
Cavey.
The Glenwood Springs Adventure Park, which apparently
you know it.
Let's not go.
You know it. 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 You know it.
No pergium. 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 No pergium.
Taking the mission with my own two eyes. Once I beam down, make my own conclusions.
So, Tarek, I know you're an avid listener of the show, so you will be familiar with the second break madness.
It is
right. Beats. Second break.
He just starts playing
stuff. You know it.
I quite
like it. You know it. You know it. You know it.
I do.
You know it.
This is a new
segment. You know it. You know it. You know it.
I do.
Taking the mission with my own two eyes. Once I beam down, make my own conclusions. Taking the mission with my own two eyes. Once I beam down, make my own conclusions.
It's a funny thing to have an officer, Starfleet officer, be like, yeah, fuck the briefing.
Yell at you? I don't know.
Oh, I'm glad we're... Can we play some sound effects related to brew pods and throats?
What about the pregnant Rutherford? We should discuss some of the pregnant Rutherford business.
Oh yeah, I had a cave baby with Dr. T.
That one?
One of my favorite things in this whole episode is the look on Tendi's face when Rutherford says he has a kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the shock
she's
and disappointment.
She's extra shocked and annoyed. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was cute. Mm-hmm. I like
this.
Let's
get you out of this cave.
They do it a couple ways in this episode. That's one of them where they sort of indicate this, you know, the flavor of their relationship. The other one is at the end of the episode when they're playing the, you know, guessing game and she guesses some optical isolinear rods or whatever in two guesses. And it's that takes place.
Is it an isolinear optical chip?
They had basically just met, right?
Right. Yes! That was the first episode.
And so that's showing right from the beginning, they were simpatico.
Is it an isolinear optical chip?
Which
yes!
I thought that was very cute.
Totally. Yeah.
Porgium. There's some kind of Porgian swamp rash.
I kept thinking of Porgian Bess, which is funny because that's a reference about, I don't know the original. You know, I know the term Porgian Bess, which I...
Porgy and Bess.
How did Billup get swamp rash?
It's not Porgy and Bess. It's Porgy and Bess.
No, but it's Porgy and Bess as an N apostrophe, as in the contraction.
Yeah, but it's not
N.
Like what they're saying, Porgian. It's not like Bess. Bess is a Porgian.
No, I agree. 100%, I'm saying... Outright, I'm admitting, Dan,
it's a homophone.
That I don't know where this is coming from. It's just I'm just trying to be honest. That this is what
just
I think
trying
of.
To be honest.
Just
with
trying
guys.
To be honest.
I think Porgian was invented for this episode, but
no Pergium.
Pergium was not invented for this episode.
No, it wasn't.
I think that was it might have been TOS.
Yes,
it was TOS was the first time. Now, what was it kind of like a fix all kind of like it like was fuel like their shuttle got fucked up so they needed Pergium. And then in Voyager, they needed Pergium for some shit. I don't know.
What did they what did they need it for in TOS? Do we know?
According to Memory Alpha, which I had and then it went away, Pergium was considered a rare commodity in some areas of the Delta Quadrant.
Devil in the Dark?
The crew of USS...
Was that what they were mining?
I think so.
And maybe that's what they were mining.
They attempted to... Voyager attempted
Dan will find
to
out.
Acquire Pergium from Barat's trading station near the Necrit Expanse to regenerate the filters of their environmental control system. But then Pergium was goes way back before that, doesn't it?
Do you see anything else on?
Yeah, you're right. The Devil in the Dark. You're right. That was the...
And that's what the miners were mining?
Yeah, and Pergium was an element...
In their cave?
They call it a mine.
And Pergium was an element used in Pergium reactors on which at least a dozen worlds depended for energy. So it's just like energy. Yeah. But in Voyager, they used it to do something else with it.
Yeah, it's just like you get your energy.
It was their filters. That's weird. It was used for energy, but in Voyager, they used it to regenerate the filters of their environmental
control
system.
They did all sorts of crazy stuff on Voyager.
Well, you need energy to regenerate the filter.
That's
okay.
True.
So they can do a lot with just pure energy. Yeah. Especially Pergium energy.
Yeah.
Pergium energy.
The best kind.
That's the best kind of energy. It's the most malleable, most adaptable.
It's like kitty litter.
It's like the silly putty of energy.
What, because it's malleable?
Malleable.
And versatile.
Malleable.
Is it bouncy? Can you bounce it?
Why are you saying malleable like that?
Yeah.
Say the word colloquially.
Colloquially.
Isn't that a weird word? Colloquial?
Toboggan.
Colloquially.
Toboggan.
Isn't that a dumb word? Colloquially?
No, it's a great word. What are you talking about?
It just sounds so dumb.
It doesn't sound dumb.
Colloquially? It's impossible
to say.
Well,
I mean, it sounds a little dumb when you say it.
You're saying it funny. That's why.
I'm saying it's hard to say. It's hard to say colloquially.
It is hard to say colloquial. And colloquially.
Colloquially. That's what, yeah, colloquially.
Colloquialism.
That's what it is. Colloquialism.
It is not an easy word.
Mm-hmm. It's just not the right amount of moist.
All right.
Oh, we were talking about Rutherford. My fault.
Well, you've already brought up a couple things. I think key
she's
point
on team cave survival.
Key point number one. It's fun to see Dr. Ta'ana in these types of away mission scenarios. She's experienced, seasoned. A lot of people on the internet have already put up the screenshot of when they are both phasering the Fraggle Rock monster called?
The Graflax?
The Graflax.
So that thing was nasty.
It's like a still shot of both Rutherford and Dr. Ta'ana like phasering the creature.
Yeah.
And Rutherford looks terrified. And Dr. Ta'ana's just like, whatever.
Another
just
one of these.
Just not going to deal with this shit again. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. But then, Dan, you brought up the whole, like, the question of consent when it comes to...
Oh, yeah, Thusa. Yeah. Which, by the way, we didn't find out her name was Thusa until after she was a baby. We didn't... Up until then, they just said, little Thusa is blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it was presuming we knew what they were talking about.
Well, I hadn't considered what you thought, what you mentioned before, Dan, about the consent issue. And
one is protecting little Thusa from being killed by the Graflex.
Yeah, I think it's a very it's an interesting question, which is like,
yeah,
because this is not on Enterprise when Trip Tucker accidentally gets pregnant. Remember that whole situation?
Yeah, I remember.
Unfortunately.
But that's the person just did that because she liked him. She wasn't like dying or anything. I was wondering, it's very interesting when you talk about the consent of impregnating somebody. If you're talking about impregnating
where
somebody.
Where would I stay?
But you're dying, and it's the aim of it is to save your life, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You could still argue that, hey, wouldn't consent be nice? But I guess in the philosophical scenario that they've presented here, there wasn't enough time to do that.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's an easy answer to that question, but I just wanted to know.
It was an invasion.
I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, it was an invasion of his body.
It was, very much so.
I mean, that's got to fucking... be difficult to manage.
Yeah, at least it was quick and it wasn't.
I'm like some dude. I'm like, man, that pregnancy must be really tough.
It looks kind of rough.
Yeah,
for gosh. 5 seconds or however long.
I don't know.
It was,
I don't know if you guys realize how. I don't know if you realize how tough that looks.
That man, he had to be pregnant for all of 15 seconds,
yeah, right.
And it looked pretty shitty.
Yeah. Okay. Well. I'm ignorant, so.
No, I know.
It's true.
It is
true. It's not what I said. Sounded absolutely ridiculous. So it looks pretty rough, guys.
Yeah.
I never even heard of such a thing.
Yeah, is he going to have to poop the baby out?
Oh, man.
No, apparently not.
Let's hope it's pooping it out.
No, cesarean.
Yeah, it's cesarean. Seems much, much easier.
Well, but what if it had to go out a hole? Okay, well.
That's not going to end that wrong.
What if it had to? I'm just going to set up that scenario. We're setting up scenarios. For me, this was not, I wouldn't say it's the weakest story. It was maybe the story I was least interested in among all of them. I still very much enjoyed it. I still liked it, but you know, I watched these episodes a few times over and I noticed this was the episode where I was like, okay, all right. Yeah.
Let's get you out of this cave.
It had the most interesting Star Trek world building moment ever though.
Which was?
Getting rid of a dirty diaper with a phaser.
Oh yeah, that was good. That was funny. I did like that.
That is now officially how every dirty diaper is handled in the Federation and I love it.
Well, it's like we've talked about before. It's like in Star Trek is the reason that you don't see toilets because they just beam the poop and the pee out. Because why not? And even though on Voyager they were all about like, you know, not beaming babies out unless it was an emergency, which I used to be more like meh, but then I was like, okay, no, you know, there's advantages to just letting things be the way they're done.
I bet in DS9 first, right? The beaming the baby.
They may have done it
to the Kira O'Brien baby.
It's possible, yeah, because I think in Voyager it was the little girl, wasn't she born on the ship?
Wildman.
Yes, Naomi Wildman. Oh,
yeah.
Anyway, There's a long history of bizarre pregnancy-related things.
That thing was nasty.
Enterprise, Voyager, Deep Space Nine.
That happens when you have mostly male writing staff.
Yes. Oh, TNG. And then, of course, TNG with Worf helping Keiko give birth and then giving us that excellent joke on Deep Space Nine when Miles is like, oh, Keiko's pregnant again. and Worf freaked out.
I must take leave.
As far as the beaming the poop and pee out, I bet what happens is whenever they transport.
I like sometimes Dan will start talking. I was like, oh, Dan's going to get us back on track about the episode. He's like, no, about the poop and the pee.
They were pee-pee.
I think whenever they have to transport, what happens is when they break them down, they break everything down, and when they build them up, they incorporate their poop and their pee into their makeup when they break them up. So when
you mean for transport,
so when you transport, it completely clears out your stomach and bladder, and that gets
that sounds nice.
And then, but it doesn't just go away; it gets incorporated into your cells. So your poop and pee is now a part of your
body.
What is your
evidence?
I'm just saying that makes the most sense because they break it down into energy. So you take the poo and pee energy and then absorb it into the body for nutrients.
That still works for children though because they don't have a baseline pattern.
Yeah,
in the transporter. Yet.
Okay.
So you still babies still poop in diapers and you disintegrate with the
food. And we know from Discovery it's
babies still poop in diapers. Yeah. The people though, like
adults
people,
though, just beam it out. Yeah.
Adults also poop in diapers.
While beaming.
They beam it into like the replicator so they can make food out of it.
Yes.
Stuff.
Yeah. Discovery is that
we learned about the poop.
So they could probably just take the baby's diaper and throw it in the replicator and if they wanted to do that.
You could, but
I guess you get a right. You know, you put dishes in the replicator and they beam away. So
the phaser should have a two-way energy situation where it shoots energy out, which is the phaser we know and love, but also it sucks in energy to power itself. So when she zaps that poopy diaper, the poopy diaper energy
just charging the phaser.
She's just charging the phaser. Yeah, that's where it goes.
She's gone like, from suck to blow.
It's like, oh, yes, exactly.
The phaser should just have this. It should just have this feature.
Yeah.
This is why we don't write Star Trek episodes. Yeah.
I don't
this
know
is why we should write. Stuff.
Yeah,
it's nasty.
We could write some poopy poops. Poops.
Ugh, I feel terrible.
Oh, poops and peas. Nobody would like it because nobody liked the very short treks. Everyone freaked out about those.
I only saw the first one. I thought it was fun. I thought it was good. The first one was good.
I think with
Pete Holmes.
I think we should have a discussion of those sometimes, a special discussion. I understand where people are coming from. Some people took it real fucking seriously. I was like, this is clear. This is some like little gag. Like you don't have to get all angry. They're just making a little goofy gag. But anyway.
Nay.
Anyway, that's my thesis, and I hopefully will defend it one day in the appropriate environment. What do you think of that, Dan? Oh, I thought you were really
heavy.
Okay, Dan, like he was getting ready to play something. I was like, oh man. I was like, ooh, I'm so excited.
He's got the perfect thing lined up for this,
what sound clip is going to happen? All right. Rutherford, Tendi. I mean, Dr. Tahana. Again, like I said, rewatches, I was a little less engaged with these, but I liked the story. It was a very Star Trek story. It was incorporating the whole like goofy history of weird pregnancy stuff, weird cave stuff, all that. I get it. All right, cool. It was also at this point in the episode where I think I first noticed.
Why didn't Tahna give Rutherford some kind of morphine when she was going to like take that baby out? She just told him to bite a fucking stick. It's like she should have given him
It was a shoe.
It was a shoe.
A shoe. Okay, yeah. A shoe. But she should have given him some Star Trek morphine. Now you think
Star Trek morphine.
She's a doctor.
Synthamorphine.
Did she have a whole med kit with her?
I mean, presumably.
I don't think she had everything.
Well, no, they were looking for they had to find stuff for a porgy and swamp rash. You know she had her medical kit with her.
She just collects it on her fur.
Yeah. Synthamorphine?
Synthamorphine.
I thought synthahol let you shrug off the effects of alcohol.
Yes.
Yeah, this shouldn't be another disaster until 1530 at the earliest.
But what I was trying to get to, what I'm attempting to get at, was that in this episode, you start to realize how they're, as part of the joke of the caves, they are reusing, or not, maybe not exactly technically reusing, but they're mimicking the reuse of the same cave background.
Oh, yeah.
With different colors.
Yeah.
Over and over. The planets, too. Each planet looked basically identical, just like a different shade.
That's true.
Yeah. Which was fun. And looking online, I saw there was a quote from Mike McMahon where he was saying that he actually had to tell the pre-visualization guys, you know, when they're like putting together the first sort of draft of the animation of the backgrounds, he was saying that they were being too creative with the caves because they can, because it's an animation, you know, and he had to tell them, no, I want you to pull back. I want these to look a lot more similar. Think of it that it's the same cave set but lit differently and with some different props around or painted different, slightly different color, but it's got to have the same sort of vibe. And so you have that. And the other thing that's similar is that there's all these almost like square sections of cave that look like they're just stacked up on top of each other. Like they've had a mold for styrofoam that they've just copied over and over. I thought, clever job, Mr. McMahon. You did a good job on this one.
Ah, yes.
Did you just like run out of all your clips? You're like down to the dregs.
I'm gonna play this one.
You shall be punished.
I will be punished. And how about this? You have the opportunity to punish me during the break. We're about to take a break. Dan's gonna punish me.
Okay.
Tarek and
do we get to watch?
Jesse, yes, you will observe. I know the punishment. It.
You should pinch his butt.
You know it.
You said that so sincerely.
You know it.
We'll find out what happens during the break when we get back from the break.
Break.
Be right back. Okay, we're back. All right. Going to be that time in the podcast.
Break.
Third act. All right.
Jesse's getting a little wound up.
No.
All right.
Your cruelty displeases us.
Anything else on the Rutherford to Anna stuff before we move on to Mariner and then Tendi?
Are
we all good on the...
Well, let's see what we got so far. So far, they're mad that Rutherford didn't tell them about the baby.
That's true. Yeah, good point.
And they're mad that Boimler hung out with Steve Levy in the holodeck.
Yeah.
So this is what they're mad at. They're getting mad at stuff now. So.
And then I guess that segues nicely into the Mariner situation, which is, I thought, one of the more surprising aspects, because Mariner, of all the people you'd expect, Mariner would be the one to not want to hang out with Delta Shift.
Right,
she's usually the most recalcitrant when it comes to these types of things. As we see with Boimler and Levy, for example, he was open to hanging out with them. Tendi, obviously, is super nice. Mm-hmm. So I like that they kind of, it's a bit of a twist to have Mariner be the one to be like, actually.
Fish out of water.
Yeah, the Delta Shift people, not so bad. And another subtle thing, and this is kind of going back to what you were saying, Tarek, like these little things that they put in there that convey information so succinctly, which is Mariner's in charge of the away mission because she's the lieutenant now. They're still ensigns. So we learn already, even before they have the whole discussion about like, we're not advancing because we're the night shift. There's evidence of that because they're still ensigns and they're being ordered around by Mariner. They clearly don't like Mariner, but they follow her orders without a moment's hesitation, right? They might not be happy about it, but they're Starfleet officers, right? They're immediately
ultimately,
like, yes.
They are
they're like, yeah, they're like, yes, ma'am, we're gonna do our thing. They complain to her a bit, but when she gives the order, they go
we'll
and start
talk
doing
behind your
stuff.
Back that's later, Mariner.
Exactly.
But we'll do
in
it.
Fact, Mariner says, "I'm the ranking officer here. Go back to the young side. That's an order.
That's an order.
Yeah, that's later. Yeah,
that's later.
Now, I mean, it matters not one whit that it is later.
One whit
in the actual story. We do need Dan's
the official.
Official. Proclamation
since,
when it comes to the that's an order situation.
Since she sounded so put out by the whole thing, I think it was a good usage.
Okay.
Because she wasn't like being dramatic. She was just really, like I said, really put out. Just like, go back to the young side, that's an order. She's just like, fuck
it
this
really
shit.
Was emphasizing that it's an order. It's
yeah.
not.
Yeah. And a reminder to the audience, Dan has issues in some cliched versions of the that's an order thing. To learn more about that, just go back and listen to pretty much any episode prior to this one.
There's other ones that I have problems with too, but I forgot them right now. But I remember I approached one several episodes back. So
yeah. It comes up rather frequently on Star Trek. Star Trek uses that cliche a lot, and sometimes in good ways and sometimes in not.
A lot of shows do it, but yeah, Star Trek definitely does it a lot. There's
It's a military structure. So.
Speaking of how this was a cave episode.
That's a strange cadence.
I know it was, but... They had the lower deck crew. There's a whole point was like they hadn't hung out for a while, and then they finally hang out. And it just occurred to me, it's like there was no Talin, and they've been featuring Talin a lot in this. So they were just they went back to the original crew. And
people on the internet have complained about this actually
that Talin wasn't there.
Well, it's not just that she wasn't there this episode. That is three episodes in a row now that there's been no Talin,
No Talin,
and so the first part of the season was very Talin heavy. Where Talin was playing a semi-major or major role in most of the episodes, and now in the last three, not any sight of Talin. Maybe she's on vacation. Maybe she's on leave.
She's getting a treatment for her early onset.
It could be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, could be.
Which is similar to what the Betazoids get.
Yeah.
Betazoids from Beta Z.
Yes, beta zoids from beta Z.
Zoids.
Avoid the zoid?
Avoid the zoid, yes. Zoids.
Remember Power Rangers? They had the Megazord?
I never watched Power Rangers.
I didn't either, but I knew what Power Rangers was.
I know what Power Rangers were, but I don't know what the Megazord was.
They were always talking about the Megazord, like, all the time.
I knew what they were, and that's why I didn't
watch
it.
What's the Megazord?
Well, I didn't watch it either. I'm just saying, I didn't watch it, and yet I still knew what a Megazord was.
Is it a big sword?
I think so.
Like, it's a Mega Sword?
Mega Sword.
A sword. 100 bad guys. 100 bad guys.
Hey, talk about another cave, the Cave of Wonders in Aladdin. That's a good one, too. Like, I'd rather not be trapped in it, but I mean, if you're going to be trapped someplace, as long as you got a candle or some sort of fire.
I've been distracted because I've been trying to think of like other examples of things besides that's an order, that's a cliche. Uh-huh. Another one is when people are like, let me get this straight. I think I remember Paris doing that with the doctor at one point, going, let me get this straight, doc. I think he said that once.
Seems like the kind of thing Paris would say a lot, actually.
Let me get this straight. So you're telling me that... Yeah. That's an order?
You're telling me.
Let's try and pay attention to that because, you know, we've only got a couple of episodes left of Lower Decks, and then it seems to be a good stretch of time until the next new episodes of Star Trek. It'll probably be Discovery, I guess.
I'm pretty excited about that.
Me too. Unfortunately, it's the last season, but it'll be fun to get into that last season.
I don't know why I keep saying actually. I guess it's just because Discovery got canceled and there was a lot of people who had issues with it. I'm really looking.
It's been a while since it's been on. It's been a while.
I think the only thing with Discovery is everything was, we've discussed about this.
It's just very intense.
It's very intense. It's like the whole galaxy is always like at risk, you know?
Like emotionally upsetting. Yeah. Like SNW, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, SNW. And even Picard have a little bit more...
grounded.
But they have more also levity in there. Yeah. And I bet you there'll be more levity in season 5 of Discovery. But
I hope there's more Tig Notaro. I don't know if there will be.
Yeah, it'd be great too because she's fantastic.
Probably.
But my point is that we will be going back soon to when there's not new episodes of Star Trek on. We still do this podcast, but we pick episodes from all over Star Trek, all over time. We'll no doubt be doing a Voyager coming up in the not too distant future, so we could keep an eye out to see if Tom Paris says that whatever you were saying that he says.
Now let me get this straight. You're telling me that that's an order?
Yeah, whatever that was, we'll make a note.
Or the what is it you see? Well, you got to come down and see it yourself. You can never just describe something.
Oh, right.
Actually, that does aggravate me a lot.
Right, yeah. So you got to see this.
It aggravates me, but kind of like Dan's thing where that's an order. What's cool is when somebody says, you've got to come down here. And, and at first you're like annoyed. You're like, okay, this again. But then they show you the thing. You're like, there was no way to explain that on the. I like when they actually pull it off. It's rare, though, in my view.
Whenever someone's like, I got something to tell you, but I can't tell you right here. That's that same sort of deal. It's like,
and then they get murdered. And you're like, I wonder what they're going to say. Yeah.
I just hate when people come up to me and are like, tell me they have something important to tell me, but they won't
You mean in real life?
In real life. And I'm saying this happens in movies and stuff too, but like in real life when someone's like, because I don't like it in movies and shows because it reminds me of real life when someone's like, I've got something really important to tell you. And I'm like, what? And they're like, I'll tell you tomorrow. And it's like, why didn't you just wait until tomorrow to tell me that you have something important to tell me when you have time to tell me that thing that is so important?
Yeah, they could have just gone like, zap it. Telling you something.
It's just like, you tell me something's important, I'm going to worry about it. There's going to be anxiety until you tell
me. Exactly, right.
Just tell me now.
What are you going to tell me?
Tell me now or wait until tomorrow to tell me that you have something important to say.
Don't even worry about it.
What are you worried about?
All right. Mariner, I'm worried about talking about Star Trek.
I'm going to be a spry old lady.
We do advertise this as a Star Trek theme.
Delta shift. I'm going to be a spry old lady.
Well, you wanted to talk about Star Trek, and there you have it.
I like the classic like aging story.
Oh yeah,
and that. But this was such a fun twist on it with Mariner and I forget what's the name of the Delta shift.
There was Asif Amado.
Well, he was the young guy.
Caravitas.
Maybe it was Caravitas. Regardless, that was funny. It was just the animation was so good of them getting older and going back and forth a little bit and having this argument, trying to one up each other sort of, but also working through their issues. I very much enjoyed when they both agreed that like the young guy with the mangled leg.
Yeah. It'll heal. Just move. Yeah.
Right. It starts healing all her.
I knew, and then I was like, if that's what I was thinking in my head. I was like, if this goes forward in time with his leg all bent like that,
that's great.
It's not just going to get better. No. It's going to heal. And it did happen. He's like, it's healing wrong.
That's why none of them were in science blue. So, they were in green and red.
Yeah. And then, of course, eventually his leg falls off. Yeah. And it's all for naught because the other ensign was able to find an even bigger deposit where you actually get slightly younger.
Mm-hmm. It's funny with the leg at the end. He's all begging to go get his like leg replaced. He's like, can we please just try to get my leg? Maybe, you know, just in case. Just in case. Like.
Well, okay. And then, of course, we shift to the moss. Grabs them up. They all get. They're all fighting. And as we referenced before,
dumb moss.
Then it insists on hearing Tendi's story, even though it is not cave appropriate.
You know, like that time when we all got trapped in that turbo lift.
And we get to see the end of the first episode of season one, the little clip, and then it continues on. We see
it was my first day on the Cerritos.
They're partying after the rage virus.
Our shuttle was hit with a magnetic anomaly on the way.
They did two echo things.
Our shuttle was hit with a magnetic anomaly. Well,
I think each story.
Every story had the echo. Every story had the flashback echo.
First day on the Cerritos.
It was more than just those two.
Yeah, no, Rutherford and Boimler also flashback. Did. Yeah.
Well, I missed that. I suck.
You're fired.
You're fired. You're fired.
I'm free.
It's like, no, Tarek, don't fire him. It's like giving Dobby the elf a sock.
Oh, okay.
Dan is tied to that chair. He's got a podcast.
Okay, let's do it.
It was, of course, a really sweet, really well-constructed conclusion to the story. You learn the lesson of the episode, of course. They not only acted out, but they stated that right in exposition when the Vendorians came up and they're all like, they do not let their new responsibilities get in the way of what's important.
Right.
Friendship was the real reward along the way, all along.
And you have this final closing shot of them all linked together, sleeping in that. My understanding is that people learn versions of that in the military, which is when you don't have a bed or whatever, you can team up so everyone can like act as each other's pillow kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But that's I think that's going to be one of those classic Star Trek shots. That's going to be like one of those scenes that people just remember from an episode where even when you don't fully remember the episode, you're like, oh, I'm going to remember that shot, that overhead shot of them in the turbo lift all linked together. It's a physical representation of their closeness and relationship, which is, it's really so incredibly well done.
Dumb moss.
And still funny and hilarious, because then, of course, they disrupt that sweetness by having Shax fling open the doors like, I'm here to save you! Which was just great. And then Boimler talking about pissing himself, all that other good stuff. It's classic. This is Mike McMahon's humor, and it jibes with my type of humor. Is I really like getting
is
into
it the... jibes or jives?
Jibe.
Jibe.
Is it jibe?
Jibes. Yeah. It jibes with...
Are you sure it's not jives?
No, jive is a different word.
Jive is bad.
No, it's not. No, jive is not bad. It's just a
you mean bad as
that's a bunch of jives.
If it's bad as in when bad is good? Like jive is bad.
It could be. Oh,
do people still say bad as in bad is good now?
You mean like
that's bad.
Not so much.
I don't think so. No.
No. Yeah. That's so jive means bad if bad means good.
No.
Yeah. Okay. What I'm getting at is that Mike McMahon's humor.
Oh, whoa, you did too.
Which jibes with my type of humor is to do the sappy stuff, do the emotional stuff, the sincere, honest, wonderful stuff, and then you just undercut it with a little sarcasm or something at the end. I don't know why I pronounce sarcasm that way.
Sarcasm. Sarcasm.
It's because we're talking about caves.
It's like sarcophagus.
It's a grotto.
Sarcophagus.
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 Yeah, you put Tutankhamun in the sarcophagus.
Way to waste bones.
I got to see Tutankhamun. I got to see his mummy laying out there in the old tomb.
You went what in the commons?
I went Tutankhamun.
What?
Because I ate too many beans.
You did?
I ate too many beans, so I was Tutankhamun.
What?
What? No way.
No, but seriously, I do highly recommend go to the Valley of the Kings and go to the tomb of Tutankhamun, and sometimes they got his body out there.
Whatever.
All right. I'm just saying it's an option.
Way to waste bones.
Okay. Yes. All of that is to say, very nice conclusion to the episode, but it also makes you think, because you're like, wait a second. They're tying up loose ends with Levy, and they're tying up loose ends with Delta Shift, and they're reminding us about how these guys are such close friends and how important that is. And then they tied up stuff with Badgy last week and Peanut Hamper.
And Anjimus.
And then you start looking at this season and you're like, man, there's like a lot of storylines that are sort of tying up ongoing character arcs and Cerrito ongoing
strong.
Stories. And you're like, okay, there's two episodes left this season. We know there's season 5, and I don't think we got to worry about anything too terrible. I don't think Mike McMahon and his team are going to make us like super sad or anything like that necessarily. That's not what I'm getting at. But Mike McMahon has talked about how he's one reason we don't know the titles to the next two episodes is because he's trying to keep everything under wraps. He was like, the choices they've made in these last two episodes are bold choices. Ooh. And that they're going to get spoiled ASAP. So he wants people to watch the episode as soon as they're available, because he said that they swung hard, or whatever the appropriate sporting analogy is.
Kicked into the ball.
Maybe those zappy aliens are really Jean-Luc Picard.
The hologram.
It's a hologram.
The hologram. Yeah.
Piloted by the actual EMA. Yeah.
Holograms.
I have no... I'm not predicting or stating anything specifically. I'm really excited for these next two episodes. And I'm kind of like a little like... nervous in a positive way. We're like, wow, I'm like, what are they gonna do? Because like they've already taken a lot of chances on this show, and I think mostly to good effect. So I'm kind of curious which direction they're gonna take things in as the show continues to evolve.
It was very much like a palate cleanser.
Yes. I like that. They're clearly setting us up for something. They're like, all right, that's most of the season done. Now let's get ready for our version of, I don't know, the best of both worlds, or what is it? But it is two episodes. They're going to be telling a story, it seems, I'm guessing, across two episodes. And I don't know if it's going to be a cliffhanger into season 5, or if maybe they're giving us our cliffhanger here and letting us be happier until season 5 happens. Because, you know, a lot of people like seeing a cliffhanger at the end of Star Trek, but with Strange New Worlds, the actor strike, and all that other stuff, people are like, oh my God. Forget about the 3 months between Best of Both Worlds Part 1 and 2. Strange New Worlds, it's going to be well over a year until we see the conclusion of that story. Yeah. So who knows? Maybe Mike McMahon is going to opt to not do that this time and keep it at a season arc that concludes with maybe a little
teaser. Do you think those bold choices were made out of necessity to like speed up the whole storytelling process?
I'm saying
bold choices, were they made because they wanted to be extra awesome, or did they have to speed up the timeline?
So here's the thing. I think reading between the lines, I think they've... I don't know how to interpret bold choices. And of course, normally you'd say, yeah, of course, a producer of a television show is like, yeah, my TV show's great. You're going to love it. It's amazing. It's the most amazing thing ever. But the thing is we're dealing with Mike McMahon and other people. Like, I trust them more, I guess. Mm-hmm. I trust Mike McMahon more to say like, hey, we're trying something pretty cool. We think people are going to like it. I think the other aspect was that partly this came up in terms of interviews with Mike McMahon. There's no spoilers here. It's just interviews with Mike McMahon where they asked him about using legacy Star Trek characters, you know, like when they've had Tom Paris on, or Rom and Lita, et cetera, and sort of the process behind that. And he was talking about how, like, yeah, you have to be really careful when you're thinking about that, because you want to have those characters on, but you also want to have them on in, like, the right timing, the right story. You don't necessarily want to bring on, say, Jean-Luc Picard for, like, a one-line joke if you also want to use him in a more impactful way later. I'm just pulling that out of whatever. But I would guess that probably there's going to be some pretty cool guest stars from the Star Trek world, or maybe just cool guest stars more generically speaking in one or both of these next two episodes.
Grand Nagus.
I don't know. This is just a mild supposition on my part, but I don't know. The structure of the season thus far has kind of been like, okay, these 8 episodes have kind of been a unit sort of going through various things. And then boom, we're going to get these next two episodes.
Back to the subject of the end of the episode. Whenever Synthahall comes up, I always have to check in with everyone to find out their current opinion on Synthahall. Does synthahol not get you drunk, or does it get you drunk and not give you a hangover? Which one of those two you think is more likely?
There's other options, too.
What other options are there?
Well, what do you think, Tarek?
Based on what we see in this episode, I think that it's the you get drunk, but you don't get hungover.
Don't get. See, that's what I would like to believe. That's what I would like to believe.
I think the third way option is that you get drunk, but you get the kind of drunk where, like, if you need to sober up quick, it's like it's not only that you don't get a hangover, but like you can
recover quickly.
I think you can recover quickly.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Which you can kind of do, like if you're like drinking or smoking marijuana or something like that. There's those times where you're like, oh shit, mm-hmm. And you can, you know, you're not sober by any means, but you kind of like get your shit together.
You're functional.
A little bit. Yeah, or at least more so than you were 2 minutes before.
Right. So then,
and I can imagine like a future version of that where it's like. Where you get that adrenaline rush where you're like, oh no, I gotta do something, you know, and then like, but the synthahol is like immediately right. Cleared.
So there probably is still a demand for for regular alcohol because it's
100%.
Probably, yeah, because it's
Scotty was always drinking the real stuff.
Most of what Quark served was real stuff.
Quark was generally
I thought Scotty only liked the real stuff because he liked it thought it tasted better, but like maybe it also gets him drunk better.
Well,
too.
Both. I mean, remember when we did our Star Trek 3, we had that clip where it sounded like Scotty was like, Well, I can't even remember what the line was, but he was clearly slurring his
I feel terrible.
So, yeah, I guess in this episode, there were the two things that, like, one of which I'm still questioning, and one of which were, it grossed me out, but I'm glad they put it in. I brought them up already, but I'll bring them up again. The part where dude's leg fell off and then he made all those crunching bone noises like crawling back, and like I said, I specifically did not record that. I thought about recording that, but it would just gross me out too much, so I'm not gonna play it. It'd be fucked up if right now I did play it, like after saying I didn't, but I promise you I do not.
You
have
did
it.
Not even copy it.
No, because I didn't want to be tempted to like right now be
right
like
now
I
would be really,
drop it right here.
It would be kind of awesome actually.
Yeah, it would, but
if you played right here.
I can't.
Do you have any celery you can snap in half?
Oh man.
To make like a bone sounds. That's actually pretty good.
That was a Cheez-It bag.
You don't say.
Well, they don't know that. They don't know that out there.
I bet you the audience knew
that's
probably. That's
what we want you to think. It was just a Cheez-It bag.
Oh, no. Probably. The Vendorians. Tark is being controlled by a Vendorian. Tark,
I am a Vendorian.
You are a morality test that the Vendorians are implementing, or are you? You're a Vendorian, and you brought us together as a morality test.
I'm being used as because I happen to be here, and the Vendorians are taking credit for it.
Exactly. See?
Such a funny idea, the morality test.
We're on the same page here. Yeah, that is presumptuous.
Complicated morality test.
Also, like I said, mentioned before, the whole like them being friends with the Moss just because the Moss tried to kill him, and then they like their stories, and so they're like, oh, we're cool.
It
like,
was
you know.
A very sudden, oh, hey, you're cool. But like Patrick was saying earlier, that's a very Star Trek.
Yeah, and the voice of the Moss was very TOS style. You know, it's like, would you be my friend? You know, that's
what. No way.
Yeah.
Was it So Lonely or the animated?
So Lonely. Oh, yeah. That's in the very first episode of TAS.
That sets the tone.
Is that Beyond the Farthest Star or something like that?
That pleases me. Nay.
Nay.
Oh, this Moss is doing something that Moss shouldn't do. Wait, this one.
I have eaten many outsiders in this cave.
Yeah.
Isn't that exciting?
With Levy and his conspiracies, at one point he says... He says the classic agree to disagree. Mm-hmm. And it just reminded me that I lament the fact that phrase has largely, I think, this is my perception anyway, been taken over by sort of the bandits and brigands.
Well, it's
and
up there when they do your own research.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Because the thing is that in concept, the idea of agreeing to disagree sounds so pleasant. It's such a nice idea. It's like, yes, it's exactly what we should be seeking, that we have differences and we're not going to agree on everything, but we can be agreeable even if we have different viewpoints on certain things, especially if we have similar viewpoints on other things, and maintain relationships and that sort of thing. But now, and they did that on purpose in this episode, it's the Levy type character is like, well, I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree.
If you ask someone, well, 1 + 1 is, and they say 2, you just like, agree to disagree, you know?
Which there are people who do that.
I'm sure there are. One of the, I think it was one of the Vendorians was played by Don Lewis, who is Captain Freeman.
The one that talked about like laying eggs and throats.
It was like the main Vendorian in that.
We
that
do lay brew pods and throats.
Yeah.
That I had marked as a beat for some reason.
We do lay brew pods in throats. We do lay brew pods in throats.
I could like lay down a track underneath that.
Maybe. Well,
it does flow nicely.
Yeah, it does. And for some reason, I recorded this.
Yell at you? I don't know.
All right, this one.
Oh, I'm glad we're...
just a half a line.
Yeah, it was like in the middle. It was. I think this part where Levy was like, oh, I'm glad we're friends or something like that. He says, I'm glad. What does he say? I'm going to look it up right now and I'm going to vamp up until...
You do that.
I'm glad you guys are my friends. No, that was... Tendy said that.
Yes,
no, he says, oh, I'm glad we're pals too, Boimler.
Oh, I'm glad we're...
And I only recorded part of it. For some reason, I got that part and I was like, that sounds cool. It's like, what are they saying? I'm glad we're...
But hey, boys!
Yeah, okay. I agree. It's very intriguing.
Yell at you? I don't know.
I like it. I also... I'd have to go back and look. I won't. I'd have to, but I won't.
So apparently you don't have to.
No, somebody in the audience can maybe do this for us and send us in just a little bit of research, because it's my perception, quite likely flawed perception, but it's my perception that they are doing more of the having the regular actors do other voices. Now, I know they've always done that to some degree or another, but it just seemed to me like more and more we're having the main set of actors do a bunch of different other characters, which is harkens back to like TAS, for example, where especially James Doohan did a bunch of voices, but a lot of them would do like some other voices as well. Nichelle Nichols, for example, did a bunch of voices on that show. And I kind of like the idea, and this is where my perception may be wrong. My brain might just be tickled by the idea that they're trying to evoke some of that flavor of the animated series by having the actors do more other voices. That was clearly Don Lewis.
Yeah, it's certainly more blatant.
Yeah,
now.
Right? As
you
opposed
shall
to.
Be punished!
As opposed to, you know, yeah, of course, Nolan North, you have some of these people. They do a million voices and you can't tell because they're really, that's what
they
do. Well,
even Fred Tessitore.
Yes, exactly. That's his job.
You have chosen to denigrate and bicker.
But anyway, that's just a possibly inaccurate observation of mine. Again, if somebody wants to go back and do a research using IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, or Memory Alpha, or whatever resource they like that happens to display the actors' names and the characters that they've played.
Rewatch every episode and look at the credits very carefully.
That's
Paramount.
You shall be punished!
Yeah, except it doesn't work well on Paramount Plus, because like every time I try to pause it, it wants to play the next thing.
It will work better when they pay you.
Yes, yeah. Send us money. We've tried to explain on the podcast before, we have very little integrity, certainly in this area of our lives. Other areas of life probably have a great deal of integrity. But when it comes to podcast, if you give us loads of cash, we are willing to say nonsense in return for that.
Eugene Cordero is in yes. The new Loki series.
Yes.
He was in
the
first
season.
He was in season one as well.
Yeah, I meant new season of Loki.
I gotcha. I thought you were using British terms.
Like,
you can say series.
Yeah, like, series. I'll be there Tuesday week or whatever. You know, that means that's like next Tuesday.
Like that's a British colloquialism. Perhaps.
I'll be there Tuesday week. It's like that's saying, instead of saying next Tuesday, you say this. You either say Tuesday or Tuesday week.
Yes. Yeah. Or you say I've put the pram in the boot of my of my lorry.
Yeah.
The pram is in the boot of my lorry. If you need to take the pram out, just check the boot of my lorry.
Yeah, my
indeed.
My what is it? I
pushed the pram.
I got you pissed with my trolley, and then you trolleyed my trolley or something. What don't they say things?
I'm unfamiliar with that particular phrase, but
that one's new.
I do encourage our UK listeners to write in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com and set us straight. Set Dan in particular straight.
In particular, yes.
Primarily Dan.
I put the biscuits on the trolley and then the biscuits got trolleyed.
I don't think so.
No, the crisps. I put the crisps on the trolley, then the trolley was crisped. No, that's crisped isn't a thing.
Crisps.
I used a trolley for
the potato
chips. I used a trolley for the crisps and then they got trolleyed. That's right.
You're talking about a biscuit trolley?
Crisp.
Okay.
Yeah, at first I was talking about biscuits.
Feedback at discussstartrek.com.
Biscuits like cookies?
What else is there? There's social media.
Yeah, they're cookies, right?
You can get us on social media. By the way, I'm concluding the show. This is the end of the show.
Oh, man.
Haven't we? Is there any?
Do
you have other
that's
things?
It. We got it.
I think we got everything, we Dan.
Do you have any other odds and ends?
Yeah. What? Are there any other odds and ends,
I don't
Dan?
Think so.
Whatever.
I don't think there's any other odds and ends. I think we've done a thorough job.
I think I'm ready for next week.
One thing I thought that worked out really well in terms of, it's not numerically significant like my other appearance here was, but my wife Laura pointed out, we were watching it, this episode's all about friendship and, you know, changes in life, and friendship can still happen. And of course, it's like, you're coming back to where you grew up to hang out with your friends.
Awesome.
Laura got that one right. And I was like, that's a very good point that I didn't think of while I was watching this multiple
times. And that's what makes Star Trek so awesome, because especially well-done Star Trek, when it has like these awesome, fun messages.
And the friendship theme got sort of amplified by the fact that they were getting really jealous of each other at first, and then Tendi brought them all back together to remind them, like, and they're stronger as a result.
Well, okay, so
I feel bad now that I said all those trolley biscuits thing, because I feel like maybe I was out of line.
No, you're not out of line.
I might have been out of line.
I don't think so.
I don't want to be out of line.
You were just trying to invent a language.
Yeah. You worry about it. What I would worry about is making sure our audience knows that they can find us on social media.
Yeah.
At It's Got Star Trek, all the social medias that are relevant.
Just the right amount of moist.
Except we're not on TikTok. I keep encouraging, Dan or Jesse to go on TikTok, but no dice.
Why don't you go on TikTok then?
I'm doing all the other stuff.
Whatever. Get the fuck out of here.
No, I'm saying I'm doing all the... I'm doing the Twitter, I'm doing the Blue Sky, I'm doing the Mass. I'm saying I'm doing all the other social media. So
I'm not doing fucking TikTok.
I know, exactly. Of course you're not doing TikTok. It would be ridiculous. It would be also
ridiculous.
Awesome.
Okay.
But it would be ridiculous.
Okay.
But
I thought you were being for real. Awesome. I thought you were being for real, though.
Yeah, I know. Being for real. Fuck you, man. We're on the social medias. We're on
Soluble Minerals.
YouTube. Subscribe to us on YouTube. That'd be fun. Rate and review.
You shall be punished.
You leave a review. 5 stars. That'd be great. Why not?
Why not 6?
We don't know the name of next week's episode. Episode 9, as we discussed. But definitely, contact us on social media. Or if you want, you can send in an audio recording at www.itsgotstartrek.com. /record. And you can leave a 90-second message. And we'd love to hear that and play it for the audience. Otherwise, of course, email's an option. And, of course, most importantly, if you happen to be in the Colorado region, we highly recommend you check out Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park.
Oh, my gosh.
As a reminder, it is
holy crap,
just off of I-70 in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. And it's about midway between Aspen and Vail.
What?
And it's approximately 160 miles west of Denver. That's west. And 90 miles east of Grand Junction.
You're what?
It's nicely located. You can get in the gondola. You can go in the caves. I'm sure there's other shit there to do.
What are you doing here?
Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park. You heard it here first.
That's what Big Cave wants you to think.
I am dying.
You gotta go there.
Right. Well, I feel terrible.
All right.
That thing was nasty.
I think that does it for us this week. Thank you very much. Thank you, Tarek.
Thank you.
Did you just talk to me? More Star Trek Lower Decks next week. Until then, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Please let us go! I thought you were just a paranoid anxiety made up by people who need an imagined enemy to simulate order on unrelated disasters so life doesn't feel so random and chaotic!
Ha! That is what we wanted you to be!